Hi, I'm Derek Jensen. This is Resistance Radio on the Progressive Radio Network. My guest today is Bill Plotkin. Bill Plotkin, PhD, is the author of The Journey of Soul Initiation, a field guide for visionaries, evolutionaries, and revolutionaries. As a depth psychologist, wilderness guide, and founder of Western Colorado's Animas Valley Institute, he has led thousands of women and men through nature-based initiatory passages. His previous books include Soulcraft, Nature and the Human Soul, and Wild Mind. He lives in Durango, Colorado, and you can visit him online at www.animas.org. So first off, thank you for your decades of great work. And second, thank you for being on the program.
Thank you, Derek, for inviting me and for your decades of amazing work that has been so important to me and my colleagues.
Well, thank you. I'd like to start today with a quote from page one of your new book, The Journey of Soul Initiation, which I thought was a great book, by the way. Anyway, I believe the root cause of the dire crises and challenges of our time, all of our current cascading environmental and cultural collapses, is a widespread failure in individual human development. This has been true for so long and in so many societies that most people today, including most psychologists, educators, and religious leaders, are unaware of this breakdown in the natural sequence of human maturation, a failure now plainly evident as witnessed in the current epidemics of psychological dysfunction as well as social and ecological degradation. So can you talk about that? And that leads to the question also of soul. Can you talk about that quote and the notion of soul? Or not the notion of soul, the reality of soul.
Yeah, thank you. So that quote you just read suggests a really different and maybe would feel like a radical idea about the problem we're in the world now and just how deep the problem is. And in some ways, I'm following in your footsteps, Dirk, because you have been telling the truth in a way that few other people have. And you've been saying, hey, we're in a really serious situation here, and let's take a look at it. Most people who are analyzing the difficulties we have in the world would say things like, oh, well, you know, the real problem is the politicians or the government or one political party or another or the corporations or the wealthy. In white supremacists, of course, they have their own idea of what's wrong, and a lot of us think, well, white supremacy, that's the problem, or religion is the problem. Or what's happening to the ecosystems, the climate chaos and pollution and so forth. And you know, I agree with most everything I just mentioned as being the problem. But I've come to the conclusion that all of those difficulties have an underlying root, a shared root. And if we don't embrace what the deeper problem is, we're not going to come up with the deeper solutions ultimately. So the quote you read suggests, I believe the root problem of every other crisis in the world now is this essentially arrested human development. And it's not a recent problem. Certainly in the Western world, it's thousands of years old, and probably in many of the dominant cultures in the world today, it is hundreds, if not thousands of years old. So it started way, way back, and that's if we embrace and accept that framework, that possibility, it leads to a lot of interesting places where we can go. So as you know, Derek, and probably everybody's heard this before, that the value of the intervention is a function of how good the diagnosis is. And so if it's true that all these other kinds of problems we have in the world result from arrested human development, then we have to, at some point, address it on that level. It's maybe not the most urgent thing right now, because probably most all of our listeners would agree the most urgent thing is to save as much life as possible as our contemporary dominator cultures collapse. But at the same time, we can also be supporting people to develop more fully in their psychologically and spiritually in their relationship to the wider world. So let's see, I'll take a breath. Oh, let's see. The other half of your question was about soul. So there's so many levels on which contemporary cultures, the dominator cultures, don't support human development. I should take a moment to say that, to my knowledge, there are some intact nature-based indigenous cultures that are still in the world that haven't been fully destroyed by dominator cultures, but there's probably not many of them that are fully intact, but there are some. And I believe they have a very similar notion to what I've come to about what true adulthood is and also true elderhood.
So,
Go ahead.
So can we hold off on the soul for a second?
Okay.
And can you talk about what do you mean by arrested development? And also that implies that there is a I don't know what the word is. Put in an adjective here, the correct adjective, a something path of development, a normal, a healthy path of development. So can you explore development for a moment?
Yeah. I can't remember if you said it in the intro, but my training way back 40 years ago was as a psychologist. So, but I ended up feeling like the Western maps of the human psyche and of human development were totally inadequate. But not surprisingly so, because they're reflections of the psyches of most of like the average person alive now. And there's the problem. So I ended up using the template of the natural world, of the more than human world, to understand both the human psyche and also the stages of human development. And so the map of human development that I ended up creating with in partnership with my colleagues is looks very, very different than contemporary Western psychology. And it's to say it's based on natural cycles, such as the four cardinal directions, what we experience in those the directions, and the four times of day, what we experience there, and also the four seasons. So looking at the human psyche, I ended up saying, well, we can map the qualities of full humanness onto the four directions. This is, of course, a map that's been used in indigenous cultures all over the world, but also in our Western and Eastern cultures, that this is a very commonly used map. So I ended up saying, well, there are these four facets of human wholeness that we're all born with the capacity to develop along those lines, but we need support from our family and community to develop these four sets of capacities, these four sets of resources. And if we don't have that support, then all four of those facets might not ever be very fully developed. And I don't know if I should take the time. I'll just say briefly, those four, just like their names, their four facets are the nurturing generative adult, the innocent sage, that's in the east, the nurturing generative adult is in the north, in the south is what I call the wild indigenous one, and in the west, the dark muse beloved. So in the course of development in a healthy culture, like everything that happens in interactions and everything that a child is taught and so forth helps them develop these four facets of human wholeness. And as I say, in the contemporary world, these four facets, especially two of them, are actually suppressed. the development is suppressed. And then when it comes to the stages of human development, there's this natural sequence, which I map out in a framework I call the soul-centric developmental wheel. And it has a very different image, a picture, a sense of what the two stages of childhood are about, and as well as adolescence. And what appears to be the case from 40 years of observation is that the vast majority of contemporary people get stuck in the third stage of development, which is early adolescence. And it's even worse than that, that a large percentage of those that get stuck in early adolescence are actually stuck in a pathological version of early adolescence. Now, that's a pretty strong thing to say and very disturbing, but it's ultimately, I believe most people would agree, it's not that surprising, because the kinds of behavior we see, even in everyday social life, but certainly among politicians and leaders of corporations and nations, it's not only early adolescence, it's egocentric and pathological, which is to say that mature humans don't act anything like that, and mature communities don't act anything like that. Okay, that gives you just a general overview.
That's great. You stopped very suddenly. Can you keep going? I mean, I love what you're saying. Or do you want me to prod?
No, I can keep going for sure.
Yes, please.
So this new book is called The Journey of Soul Initiation, and that's my phrase for, we might say, a generic cultural process that every healthy culture would have to help people get from early adolescence through late adolescence into early adulthood. But I have to ask our listeners to keep in mind that what I mean by adulthood is not only different from what we think about it in the Western world, it's not even on the same map. It's completely distinct. So one of the phrases I use that's more descriptive or evocative than that word adulthood is visionary artisans of cultural evolution. And in a pathological culture like ours, then these people are actually visionary artisans of cultural renaissance or cultural regeneration. But to really flesh that out even one more little step, then what I need to say is that a true adult or a visionary artisan of cultural evolution is a person who is soul initiated. So then we come back to that question, Derek, what do I mean by soul? And like so much of my work, I mean something that at least at first is going to sound completely different than the way most people use the word soul. Because what came to me is that we're really confused about soul in the contemporary world, and we tend to think of it as a religious concept or a psychological one or a spiritual one. And I'm quite sure that all of those are misleading ways to understand soul. So here it is, Derek. My concept of soul is ecological. And what I mean by it is that the soul of a thing is its unique ecological niche in the more than human world. Everything has a unique place. Every species has a unique place or niche, and every individual within every species has a unique niche. We're no exception to that. One of the major themes in all the work we do at Animus Valley Institute is something like, you know what? We humans are really not exceptions. We're not any different than anything else on the planet, that we're meant to not just be life sustaining, but life enhancing. Everything on life, every creature on this planet, you might say, is designed or has been created for a niche in such a way that its way of being in the world enhances life. And evolution is a story of life continually enhancing and becoming more complex and more diverse. And we humans appear to be the one exception as far as we know. Well, that's interesting. Not only are we not not only are we having great trouble creating life-sustaining societies, what we're actually doing, we've created life-destroying civilizations. And everybody knows, certainly those who are listening to this podcast, is that we're at the brink of the end of that whole story. So, but when we think of soul as things unique ecological niche, then we say, okay, that's true for our species too. And we could talk about, if you'd like, what our place might be as a species on this planet. That our true place, our potential, not what we're actually doing, which is destroying life. But there's also the question individually. So the journey of soul initiation is something that people who manage to get to late adolescence, what I call late adolescence, which is not our late teen years, it's a psychological stage that most contemporary humans never reach. And when they do, it's the late teens would be the earliest. Mid-20s, more common, late-20s, very common, and some people don't get there till 30s, 40s, or 50s or later, and most people never. But so it's in the journey of soul initiation that the goal is to discover and be changed by the discovery of our unique ecological niche. But we don't discover that niche in literal, like, ecosystem terms. The way it appears to work for us humans is that when we discover our unique eco niche, we're actually having an experience of a metaphor through a dream or a vision or the revelation of an archetype or symbol or a myth or a poem. And that's the way we come to understand our individual niche is metaphorically. So for those who've read any of my books, you know that my first soul encounter, which was when I was 30 years old, it was on the fourth day of my first vision fast. Not that one needs to do a vision fast to have a soul encounter, but that's the way it worked for me. Without going into any details, I had an interaction with a large yellow butterfly that flew towards me and brushed the left side of my face with her wings, and as she went by, I heard in English the words cocoon weaver. So our imaginations are able to translate interactions with other than humans in that way. In fact, we need our imaginations to understand what any other human is saying verbally, for that matter. So I heard those two words, and I soon, within a half a minute or so, got it that I was just shown metaphorically, or the way we like to say it is mythopoetically, what my unique niche is in the world to help other humans weave cocoons of transformation, which is what happens during the journey of soul initiation, which, as I say, happens during what I call late adolescence. And so the symbol or metaphor I ended up using for late adolescence, or the earth archetype, is, not surprisingly, the cocoon, because we go through a transformation that is very much like what a caterpillar goes through in the cocoon, except it's not so much our bodies that are changing, it's our egos are being shape-shifted from adolescent to adult.
You know, this reminds me a lot of something that Luis Rodriguez said to me decades ago. He was a former gang member who got out through the literature revolution. And one of the questions I asked him was, why do so many gang kids stand on street corners shooting at mirror images of themselves? And, you know, he said there's a lot of, you know, socio-political reasons, blah, blah, blah. But the one he was most interested in was the fact that the teenagers knew that they had to die and be reborn, basically die as children and be reborn as adults, but that no one was telling them that this death was supposed to be spiritual and metaphorical. And so they were enacting it in real life. And am I way off base, or are we talking sort of about the same thing?
Well, I'd say yes and no. There is that symbolic theme that what happens in the cocoon for a human and what happens for a caterpillar and so on is a kind of dying and a being reborn. And we find that in so much spiritual literature, that the necessity to die before we're born into a larger or deeper identity. So yeah, I agree with it, that idea on that level. But we have to ask ourselves about those teenagers on the street corners with guns, that the odds are that they are in an early adolescence, and maybe not even a healthy early adolescence. And it's not their fault. It's the fault of their culture. The fact that we have very few true adults in contemporary cultures, and even fewer percentage-wise elders, true elders. It's like our culture hardly really understands what a true elder is. I think, again, my understanding of what a true elder is very, very different than what we find in the contemporary Western mainstream, and same with an adult. And you have to be an adult for some time before you become a true elder. But back to those teens on the street corners, it could be on some deep level beneath their consciousness, they know, yes, I agree, they know that they have to die before they can morph into their adult selves, because the template of human development is in every single individual human psyche. It's there. And we can rediscover it again. In some ways, what I feel we've been doing at Animus Valley Institute for 40 years is rediscovering what is already built into our human psyches. There's these like original instructions of being human. And what we're looking for, what we're hoping to achieve during the journey of soul initiation, is to discover our individual original instructions, who we were born to be. And here's the rub that makes this so different than the way we think in contemporary Western culture and psychology. Namely that who we were born to be can never be defined in terms of any social role or any vocation or any religious alignment or any creative project. That if you'll accept my framework just to play with it, that the soul is our unique ecological niche, then, and we're born with it, well, then it has to be pre-linguistic and pre-cultural. And so it can't be defined in cultural terms. It can't even be defined in the everyday words of any language. It's a particular place in the ecosystem that we were born to take. Like in my case, it has to do with weaving cocoons. So the soul never said to me, hey, Bill, you're destined to be an author of books, or a soul initiation guide, or a vision fast guide, or a psychologist. Those are all social, cultural constructs. And wondering if there's anything more to say about those teenagers. And on some level, I agree with that story, Derek, but the odds are that those teenagers are stuck in a really unhealthy early adolescence, and it's not their fault. But on some other level, it might be that they're intuiting this deeper psycho-spiritual transformation that has to happen at some point.
Oh, I completely agree with you. And that latter part was the part I was trying to get to.
Yeah.
Or get at. So I have three questions, and you can take them in any order, or you can ignore them and go whatever direction you want. And the first question is, so what is, in your perspective, what is an adult? Second question is, what is an elder? And the third question is, I had a throwaway line in, or it wasn't really throwaway, but I had a line in A Language Older Than Words that just sort of hung there. And then I ended up, it intrigued me so much, I wrote my entire book, Dreams, about it. And the line was that I believe that we misinterpret the world, in that the world is a great dream, by which I do not mean that it's evanescent. It's not like the dreams we have at night where you wake up and then, you know, your leg still hurts. You know, it's not, that doesn't diminish it. But instead, if I see a horse in a dream, it's like, oh my God, that was a horse. What does a horse mean? But if I see a horse in waking reality, it's like, oh, it's another damn horse in another damn field. Who cares? And so if you see a butterfly in a dream, you immediately, what does a butterfly mean? What is it? What are its ramifications? What is it telling me? But if you see a butterfly in waking reality, it's like, oh, it's an insect flying from plant to plant, except in your case there. So the point is that the world is a living, is alive and filled with all these and filled with all sorts of meaning. So those are my three thoughts slash questions. So take any of those, any direction you want.
Okay. Okay. So here's a slightly longer definition of adult than I gave before. An adult is a adult human is a person who has had one or more, oh, you can back up before that, is a human who experiences their primary sense of belonging as it being in what their membership in the more than human world, the greater Earth community, and has had one or more visions or revelations of their unique place in that community, the Earth community, and has developed one or more delivery systems for carrying or for inhabiting or occupying that unique place as a gift to their human village and also the larger Earth community. And that's just a slightly longer way of saying an adult is a visionary artisan of cultural regeneration or renaissance or evolution. And so, and an adult, we might add, is someone whose deepest fulfillment in life comes through their providing their unique service to the world. It's something that is, there's nothing more enjoyable than doing that. And for a true adult, life is mysterious and enchanted and a challenging, dangerous, joyous adventure. It's nothing like what Peter Pan was trying to avoid. Okay, so that's an adult. And an elder is someone, first of all, just as a reminder, has been an adult for some number of years, usually it's 10, 20 or more years, and has been in their adulthood, they have been cultivating one or more delivery systems for embodying the unique ecological niche. And in late adulthood, they have developed one or more never before seen delivery systems for their unique gift to the world. And that, by the way, is it's through late adulthood that human cultures evolve, because the late adult is creating these never before seen forms. And that's like, so adults are the growing tip of the unfolding or evolution of a culture. And by the way, there's an important implication here is that you can take the smartest, most mature people in the world and put them together and tell them, please design a healthy culture, and it's not possible, because healthy cultures don't come from the strategic mind. Healthy cultures are organic developments that grow out of a whole number of true adults creating social forms for their unique gift to the world and doing it in cooperation and sometimes in healthy competition with each other. And that's how the new forms grow and the new where the new myths come from and so on. Okay, so we're talking about elderhood, trying to get there. So a true elder is someone who had gone through these two stages of adulthood and then goes through the passage into early elderhood. And the elder is someone who's no longer primarily focused on their particular gift and embodying it more elaborately and beautifully in the world, but rather the true elder is taking on the question of what needs to happen to keep the human village or the human culture, the human society on good terms with, to be in healthy relationship with the larger Earth community. And there's a number of ways that elders do that. I go through that in one of my books called Nature and the Human Soul, won't go through the details right now, unless you later insist, Derek, but that's the thing that elders are focused on, and that's what they're working on together. How do we keep the village world, the human village world, in right relationship with the larger earth community? So if you think about it for a moment, if you have a society that has few elders, things are going to go wrong really quickly, even if you have adults. And that's what we're seeing in the world right now. The dominant cultures are cultures that have few, if any, true elders and not many true adults. And the relationship between the human world and the larger earth systems has gone totally haywire, and we're quickly bringing everything to the story of life here on this planet to a close because of that. Okay, so that's elders. Oh, I should add this one. In a healthy culture, there is no such thing as a politician. That's a symptom. Politicians, just the fact of politicians, is a symptom of an egocentric, pathological, early adolescent culture. That what you have in healthy cultures are elders. And elders are not elected. They're recognized. And they're recognized by true adults and even healthy adolescents. That in a healthy culture, you know an elder when you meet one. Okay. So then that third part of your question, Derek, was about
about the butterfly.
Yeah. And what does it mean? So there's a few ways we can go with that. Contemporary Western dream work, most all of the forms, the methods that we use are early adolescent and egocentric. That the approach, speaking very generally, is that a person has a dream, they share their dream with somebody else, or they just share it with themselves when they wake up, and then they start interpreting their dream. And so it's the ego that's doing its work on the dream, doing the work by dream interpretation. And then once it's interpreted, then the ego will attempt to apply the interpretation to their everyday surface life. It's all egocentric. It can be very entertaining and emotionally cathartic and so on, but not very deep. I'm not saying it's useless, but not very deep. Whereas the kind of dream work we use at Animus Valley Institute, we call soul-centric. And the roots of this understanding, this practice, well, the roots of the understanding comes from the archetypal psychologist James Hillman, wrote the book The Dream in the Underworld, where he presents this completely different way to approach dreams, in which it's the dream that's doing the work on the ego, and the dream worker is helping the dream do its work on the dreamer, which are specifically the dreamer's ego. And so each dream from that perspective is potentially initiatory. And it's like each night dream, this is especially for people in the cocoon stage, late adolescence and later, each dream is bringing the ego into this other world, this world that was created brilliantly by some part of the psyche that for one useful way to refer to that part of the psyche is simply the dream maker, might be close cousin to the muse, even related to the soul. And in each dream, there's a potential shift of our initiation of the ego into a deeper, truer, more mature, more individuated way of being in the world. Okay, so from that perspective, the dream already has its own meaning. And we don't get to the meaning by interpreting it. The dream has its, you might say, its own purpose. Okay, now more generally, we can say that, let me back up, in the Western world, the way we think about meaning is that it's something that's imposed onto the world by ourselves, by our brilliant egos. And that's certainly what we do a lot with meaning. We, in fact, do impose our own perspective on things that happen, things people do, things we experience, and say, okay, this is what it means. But I want to say that meaning is something that's actually inherent in the world. And the true or deeper meaning of something has to do with its relationship with other things, its natural relationship. So the way, of course, ecosystems work is everything's in relationship with everything else. And so I'm talking about like interbeing here. And the way I like to say it is that everything on Earth is what it is by virtue of its relationship with everything else. And it's that relationship with everything else that gives a thing its meaning. And another way to say a thing about, to refer to a thing's relationship with everything is its ecological niche. That's exactly what we mean by a niche. So meaning is inherent in the world and independent of our egos, the deeper meanings, and it's comes from a thing's niche. So back to the question of adults, an adult is someone who has not only discovered their ecological niche, but their ego has been reshaped, metamorphosed by that discovery. So one thing about visions is they're not primarily information. It's not like I had this interaction with this butterfly and it said cocoon weaver and I went, oh, great, got the answer. And now I can use my strategic mind to be a cocoon weaver. It's not that kind of thing at all. That a true vision is something that just shakes us to the core and starts rearranging our egos. If we will say yes to that vision at all, this is similar to what I was saying about dream work. If we allow the dream and even support the dream to do its work on the ego, we are grown and shapeshifted by that. And it's that much more true for a vision of the sort I refer to as a soul encounter. We have that, like in my case, I had that interaction with that butterfly, and that vision itself started going to work on me. And we could say it's still working on me, and it will keep working on me the rest of this life.
So I love this. Thank you so much for saying all that. And we have about 10 or 11 minutes left, and I want to address to ask you to address a different word in your subtitle, which is the words field guide. And I'm going to ask again multiple questions, and I'm sure you can tie them all together, which is, first off, what do you mean by a field guide? And second, given everything you're saying, which I think is brilliant, and I just love it, and given where we are, how does one, because you've talked about community, and I'm thinking about televisions, and I'm thinking about atomized individuals, and I'm thinking about cities as opposed to communities. And so how does one, and I'm also thinking about a poll that I read several years ago, in which they asked a bunch of young people, if they had a choice between Wi-Fi and sunlight, which would they choose? And they overwhelmingly chose Wi-Fi. Mm. And so given our profound disconnect from wild nature, and given our profound cultural disconnect, because of course we are ourselves still animals, and given our fractured communities, given the fact that, and I'm agreeing with every single thing you say about us being a sort of a pathological adolescence, given all that, how does an individual and how does a community do this work? How do we become? That's where we get the field guide. So I'll just shut up now and let you go.
Thanks. I mean, thanks for the questions. Okay, so a field guide means that one way to say it is that this unfolding, this initiatory process that maybe 20% of contemporary humans ever even get close to the beginning of, is a kind of initiatory process that's built into who we are as humans. So we didn't invent it. Animist Valley Institute didn't invent this, that in studying in the traditions of intact cultures, nature-based cultures, we find the same kind of deep structure of the initiatory process, and every culture has its own way of fleshing it out and so forth. But it's already there. It's like it's a terrain. It's a natural terrain, you could say, as an analogy. And so this, as a field guide, this is a description of an initiatory journey that has these phases. Like the book is actually primarily about one particular spiritual adventure within the journey of soul initiation. That particular adventure is called the Descent to Soul. It's actually what I wanted to title the book, but the editor of the press said, don't use the word descent. People think you're going to bring them to hell or something. So we'll call it the journey of soul initiation. But the descent has these five phases. And I didn't come up with that theoretically. I came up with that by guiding people for 40 years now and noticing what phases they actually go through. And they go through the phases that their psyche, their human psyche, has created for them to go through. So in that sense, it's a field guide. It's also a field guide in the sense it's something, it's kind of like a handbook. It's something you'd want with you if you actually do make it to early adolescence, the cocoon stage, and you start experiencing the psycho-spiritual rug pulled out from underneath your feet, and you're starting to plummet towards something that is so delicious and so enchanting. And also really deeply dangerous, and you know that you will never be the same because of it, and you might not even physically survive it. So the book is a field guide for people going through this experience and or for guides who are supporting others to go through the experience. So then you ask, how does one, an individual or community, do this work? And so I want to make a similar point to what I just did, and that is, it's actually, I have found, and my colleagues have found, it's surprisingly easy to help other humans go through the steps of completing their early adolescence, which is to say, cultivating their wholeness and helping them discover how to heal themselves, which is always more powerful, deeper, longer lasting than being healed by others. It's surprisingly easy to help people go through that process. And I can have only one conclusion of why it's easy. Namely, that's the way our psyches are designed. That's the way the world is designed. And that as we rediscover ways to support these completely natural processes, it's not that hard. And one of the implications of saying that is that our contemporary cultures are actually designed not only to ignore these natural processes of human development, but to suppress them. And there's a good reason why they've been suppressed for so many hundreds, if not thousands of years. Namely, children and early adolescents are much, much easier to control than adults and elders. And so thousands of years ago, the people who became rulers of communities, of cultures, who had never grown up themselves and ended up submitting to their own pathological greed and willing to use violence to hoard things, one of their first orders of business is to get rid of the initiation rites, and kill the adults and elders. And we're about 5,000 or more years at the end of that process. And also rooting out any healthy cultures that we might be able to find left on the planet. So how does one do it? In my book, Wild Mind, is a map of the natural processes of wholing and self-healing. And I borrowed a lot from other authors and so forth. I mean, this stuff is not that obscure, but it's seldom that we have put it all on the same map to make sure we got all our bases covered. And my book, Nature and the Human Soul, looks at the stages of human development and what are the developmental tasks that a person needs to go through in order to progress and mature, and how we can support that in others. So there's at least a brief version of an answer.
So I'm thinking a couple of things. One of them is, a week and a half ago, I popped my hamstring, and I think it's really cool that we don't actually have to do anything in order to heal. I mean, my hamstring is healing slowly on its own. And I love that. And then also, it's like, we don't have to do anything physically to grow up. I mean, sure, there's the quote growing pains, you know, as you go through puberty, and there's all the weird hormonal stuff that we go through as teenagers. But all I'm saying is, I'm just sort of using a physical analogy for the process you're talking about psychologically. We just sort of have to get out of the way in some ways, right?
Not entirely. To get into early adolescence, yeah, we pretty much just get out of the way. And a healthy culture will support children in early adolescence in their development. But what we find in cultures all over the world is that they have created, healthy cultures have created, this initiatory process without which people can get stuck at early adolescence. And it only takes one megalomaniac, narcissistic ruler to destroy a culture. And I believe healthy cultures know that it's a vulnerability that we humans have. And so once we get to early adolescence, then unlike any other species on the planet, as far as we know, we need these, not biological based, but these culturally based forms that are called initiation processes that help someone get from early adolescence into late adolescence, through late adolescence into early adulthood. And it's not just Western cultures that have gone wrong, that have lost their initiation rites. We see this happening. The record is that it's happening in places. It has happened in places all over the world, that it's challenging to keep a culture healthy because of our particular human mode of consciousness, which is ego consciousness. And it's both our greatest power and it's our greatest burden and weapon that we can use on ourselves and others. And and what I've learned is not just biological. It's not just a matter of getting out of the way. That is, once we get to early adolescence, we need initiation rites to help us get through the next stage. And that, I didn't begin my work by believing that's what I was doing, but I ended up feeling like, oh, what we're doing here is creating reinventing a contemporary Western nature-based approach to initiation of the sort that all healthy cultures have had in the past and all future healthy cultures will need to have if we don't go extinct sometime later this century.
Well, thank you for saying all that. And I'm sorry about my last question. I was extremely unclear in the way I said it. What I was trying to get at was sort of the same point that you were saying, that there are some means by which that are common among different cultures, and that implies that it is a natural process. That's all I was trying to get at.
Got it. Yes.
Yeah, so I said it extremely poorly. Sorry about that.
Or maybe I didn't hear it.
No. It was me, not you. okay, so we have like a minute or two left, and I would like for you to do I would like for you to tell listeners how they can learn more about your work and also how they can actually participate in these in your work in Animus's assistance.
Yeah, great, thanks. So of course you can find us on the web at www.animus.org. You spelled that earlier, Derek. It's animus is the, or animas is the Spanish word for souls. It's A-N-I-M-A-S. And on the website, you'll find our offerings anywhere from 3 or 4 days to a couple of weeks or even year-long processes. And because of COVID, we have shifted mostly to online, which is not ideal because our work is best in person and in wilderness or relatively wild places. But we're hoping by this summer we'll be back to mostly in the field programs. We do have a lot of online things happening, and we have something like 20 guides. And we don't just go out and hire our guides, that we train them, or they have found their own way to train in this kind of work. And most of these guides have trained for 5, 7, 10 years or more. And we have offerings in many places of the world, maybe 20 different countries. You'll find all that on the Animus website. And I'll just end by saying, in a healthy culture, nobody would be offering programs that are 5 days or 10 days long that you pay in terms of with monetary capital. And rather, there would be healthy communities, and the elders would be watching to see when someone is ready to transition into the cocoon, and then they would take them aside and guide them through a process of months or years. But the best I know, at any rate, to do at this time is to offer these 5-day gatherings for people from various places, and or 10 or 14 days long. And it's mostly the best we can do at this point. And it makes all the difference.
Well, thank you so much for all of your fantastic work in the world. And thank you for being on the program. And I would like to thank listeners for listening. My guest today has been Bill Plotkin. This is Derek Jensen for Resistance Radio on the Progressive Radio Network.